Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host, and you're listening to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. Thanks so much for joining me this week. My motivational quote for today is by Roy T. Bennett, and it says, "Don't be pushed around by the fears in your mind. Be led by the dreams in your heart." Have you ever felt that sometimes your life just doesn't work out the way maybe you hoped and planned years ago? Do you see repetitive patterns in your life just over and over again? Perhaps the patterns are the same, it's just the people in the backdrop that are changing. Why does this happen, and could you be creating these repetitive situations? Did you know that many of our core beliefs and how we actually respond to the world come from deep inside us at a cellular level? If we can change that cellular programming, like that's easy to do, right? Perhaps we can create the lives we all dream about, but just seem to be unsure of how to go and progress to get it. This is such a vital topic, I think, for all of us to explore and investigate, because it really can help us navigate and change our paradigm or perspective of thinking to create more positive, empowering lives for ourselves and for our kids and just for our lives. My guest today is Kate O'Connell, and we're actually going to discuss her book, Beyond the Imprint. Kate is a child and family therapist with a private practice in Charlottesville, Virginia, addressing the therapeutic needs of children, adolescents, adults, and families. The goal of Kate's groundbreaking book is for the therapist to facilitate a safe, therapeutic experience, one in which the client is able to explore, identify, and dissolve imprinting at the cellular level. Kate helps us explore, today is going to help us explore quantum physics and how that helps us understand that we can change what is outside of us by simply changing ourselves. I'm very excited to explore this topic for the second time. So please help me welcome Kate O'Connell to the show. So Kate, thanks so much for being on.
Thanks, Connie. I'm really glad to be back.
And, you know, the last time we did the show, if you didn't listen to Kate and I last time, you might want to go back and listen and then listen to this, because we're kind of building on the topic. But we really want to further explore this. It's really a self-awareness. I think I read your book, Kate, as a self-awareness tool, but also for any therapists who deal with kids, families, et cetera. So it really it's good for therapists, but it's also good for individuals to read, right?
Yes. I've written the book in such a way that it's accessible for everyone, and I understood that that was critical, because one of the central theses of this modality is to change the paradigm in the relationship between the expert therapist and the client patient, to one that is not hierarchical. So this is the understanding that often and mostly the therapeutic relationship can end up becoming another codependent relationship that doesn't really facilitate any significant change in the client. And so by making this book accessible to everybody, and I have kids as young as 15 reading it and understanding it, then we're elevating the client to a very different experience and therefore increasing their capacity to make significant changes.
Because it's ownership, right, Kate? When you read it as the individual, and therapy absolutely has its place, right? Because it's very hard to navigate, especially if you've had trauma in your life, et cetera, right? To put that in perspective. But as soon as you read this book, you understand how you're a partner with the therapist in the process of change, and that they can't do it for you, right?
Correct. Yes. And we're just facilitators. And what this book does, and your description is really quite appropriate, because essentially I've decoded the whole experience of doing therapy that makes it less mysterious and makes it less complex, because it's not that complex. We're all at the effect of the same thing. We've all been imprinted in the 50 trillion cells of our body from the moment of conception, And then depending on our experience, we've had significant stress and or trauma. That's a big part of that imprinting that sets us up for all of our perceptions, beliefs, behavioral patterns, relationship patterns. And we're all at the effect of this, and we're doing it all of the time in an unconscious attempt to get our needs met through relationship. And so when you have a modality that addresses essentially the human experience for the past 300 years, that is what it is because of our conditioning within the dualistic paradigm, and we address it at that level, then anything can be shifted.
Now, in the book, you talk about that we're the only animals on the planet that are aware that actually our time here, right, in this finite place is limited. And you state that it sets us up, sets all of us up for mental, emotional, and physical suffering. How does being aware of that finite time cause these distresses for us?
Great. It's an excellent question, and it's one that I like to bring into therapy often just as a frame for people to understand what they've been unconsciously at the effect of their whole life. So if you think about it, our awareness of the fact that our time here in this physical body on the planet in this dimension is finite within this lifetime, then everything that we're doing in life unconsciously is about mitigating loss. Because if we did not know that, and there is a time that we could go back if we wanted in our early childhood development where we could actually remember when we first became aware of the whole concept of death. And prior to that, we were pretty footloose and fancy free in terms of not thinking about the past or the future. As children, we lived fully in the present. And after we became aware of the concept of death and we started to translate that out, infer it into specific people and situations, and I can recall when that happened in my own life, that's when we started worrying. That's when we started projecting into the future. That's when we started spending a lot of time in the past. So our awareness of the fact that we are in this body for a finite amount of time sets us up to express everything that's in the DSM-4. It sets us up for any emotional, physical, or psychological imbalance and disease expression. It's what's created the perception of lack. It's what informs conflict. It's what informs war. It's what informs competition. And so when you go back in time to Earth-centered cultures, indigenous cultures, who did not believe that there was even such a thing as death. And for those of us who are continuing to study within those frameworks, and myself included, that's the key. The ancient mystery schools, all they did was to get you very comfortable with the experience of leaving your body and the understanding that there was no such thing as death because we as consciousness continue to exist. And so that's what allows us to access freedom beyond the fears and the anxieties that come with the belief that we're only here for a certain amount of time and we have to get as much of the pie as we possibly can. And it creates the illusion of separation with the other, and it sets us up for everything.
It's so funny, as you were describing that, two things popped into my head. When I turned 30, I wasn't married yet, and I didn't have children, obviously, but I was just about completing my MBA. I was in the process of buying a home on my own. I was making a really, you know, great income. You know, this is in the 90s, right? And
right.
I remember my 30th birthday. I was so sad, and my now husband, we were dating at the time, and we were engaged. I was completing my MBA. I was getting my Series 7 license, so I had all these accomplishments, right? And he's like, "What's going on?" And I said, I'm not married. I don't have kids, and all my other friends do. What's wrong with me?" And he's like, "Oh, my God, but how many people have the career you have and the MBA and the licensing and all of these things that you've accomplished? Like, what's wrong with you?" And I felt like an utter and complete failure at the age of 30. How sad is that? Again, because of this comparophobia kind of stuff. The other thing that – go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just confirming that. That's exactly correct. It was through the comparisons that happen within this conditioning that had you feeling really shitty about yourself.
Yes. And the funny thing is, those with kids and families were looking at me saying, oh, my God, look at all that she's accomplished. Yet I felt like an utter failure. Then when I turned 50, this was another interesting perspective, because I am a lifelong learner. I'm always taking online classes, reading books like yours, right, constantly. And when I turned 50, again, I went into this funk, and I was talking to a friend, and he's like, what is going on with you? Because it's pretty evident when I'm off, right? Because I'm always very high energy, happy. I love life, right? And I said, I'm 50, and I'm running out of time. And he looked at me, and he said, that's the most ridiculous thing I've heard. Think about from 25 to 50 what you've accomplished. And I was like, yeah, a lot. And he says, okay, so now you think you're going to be irrelevant at 75? So 50 to 75, with what you know now, right, and the resources you have now that you didn't have in your 20s, think about what you can accomplish. And I looked at him and I said, oh, my God, you're right. But again, that fear of we don't have much time left hit me at 50 and never before. So, you know, you're laughing, but how many other people feel that way, Kate, where it's like, oh my God, right? That feeling of pressure.
Right, exactly. And a lot of our conditioning, if not all of our conditioning, very much reinforces it. And we're doing this with our children all of the time. I mean, the fact that we're doing career assessments on them when they're 12 years old is a very strong message that they have to figure out what it is they want to do for the rest of their life, because God forbid they would take a misstep and not be able to achieve what is the collective definition of success. And as you said, run out of time. And it, you know, as you're talking, it brought to mind the 5 years that I spent in the Adirondacks studying with a medicine woman and shaman, in which I was not on a clock. I was not on linear time. And so what was very interesting was that's when I truly understood that you can shapeshift time. Time is not linear until you start to measure it. Nothing is linear until you start to measure it. And so when I was in the Adirondacks, a 24-hour day felt a lot more like 48 hours.
Wow.
And you got a lot more done. It was incredible.
But we measure everything. We're a society that measures. We measure everything.
The paradigm, and we measure everything so that we can compare it, and then we can challenge it, and then we can spend all of our time debating it, all of which is not particularly helpful in my mind, and it sets us up for a lot of, you know, of these imbalances and subsequent disease expressions, and how we express our stress and our trauma through these disease expressions is determined by what we're genetically predisposed to. So we've all been imprinted. We're all carrying memory within the 50 trillion cells of our body that starts at the moment of conception, in which we inherit this memory from our respective lineages going all the way back. And then at that point, we're implanted in our very first environment, which is mom's womb, and depending on her stress levels, and our limbic brain being the first part of the brain that develops, which all it does is take in sensations, we're already picking up signals from our environment that it's not safe to be physical. And then we're born, and you know, we all have our different versions of what that was like as we were being parented by well-meaning, well-intentioned people who were parenting unconsciously through their unresolved imprinting and so on and so on. So this modality brings all of this to light so that we can talk about it and identify what needs to happen differently in order for people to have a very different experience.
And you know what's interesting is no one escapes this. We've all been imprinted, right? We are all programmed from when we're children to look at, you know, if you got a 98 on a test, which is an exceptional grade, they put the -2 in red. And then the 98 with the blue pen. So they emphasize, right? But we're imprinted that, oh, and as soon as you get it back, you go, oh, I got 2 wrong. Instead of, oh, my God, I got 98 right, right, if there was 100 questions on the test. So we're no one escapes it. And the other thing, you're going to laugh, when my kids, when they say, oh, you know, you're ruining us or you're mean or whatever it is, you know, as growing up. And I would say to them, you know what? You didn't come out with a user manual. So when you have kids, do a better job. In the meantime, you want me to sign you up for therapy? I'm happy to do it. But see, it's funny. And they look at me and they laugh. But I say, I am doing the best I can with what I know to try to make you healthy, strong. But I'm imprinted. So now I'm imprinting on them. And sometimes you realize it.
Yeah.
And Kate, sometimes we realize it, but sometimes we don't.
Well, we mostly don't until we do, and that's one of the things that this modality is bringing to people's awareness and talking about it in a way that's actually effective. Because over time, we've identified a lot of things that we've understood get in the way of raising incredibly healthy children, but how that ends up being used and applied, I think, has fallen short for the most part in being able to create significant changes in people's lives. Until we really truly understand that all we're doing every single day unconsciously is showing up, attempting to get our emotional and physical needs met in a way that they were not met during critical stages of development. And we're doing that in all of our relationships, the ones with our children, the ones with our spouses, with our professional relationships, with our best friends. And that's all that's happening. And because we learned at very early ages, starting in utero, that it is potentially unsafe to be physical because we have experiences that are very painful, we are all defended and we're all guarded. And so what this modality does is it addresses all of that. And it helps us learn how to let go of our defenses so that we can truly learn how to become intimate with self and therefore intimate with others. Intimacy is a big part that's missing in humanity right now.
Yeah, we are all very, what's the right word? Stuck up, not the right word. We're all wound
guarded.
So
we're
tight.
We're very guarded.
Guarded, yeah.
We're guarded and defended, and that's what happens. And so as we move through our day, if people are listening to this, they'll be start to become aware of stimulus in the environment that's delivered in, the classic is in traffic, in which something in the environment touches in on a time and a place that is a memory encoded in your body that reminds you that you were not safe. That's what happens to us in traffic when we have extreme reactivity in response to how other people drive and being cut off. It's just memory of not being safe is what gets touched in on, and then we have extreme reactions to it. That's part of our defense mechanism. The whole fight or flight response is engaged. And so what we do in working with this modality is we change our response to the environment. When we change our response to the environment, then everything changes within us.
Yeah.
And we can start to begin to dissolve this imprinting that has us cycling through these unconscious loops of defending ourselves.
Over and over again. Like we're not in control.
Over and over.
Yeah, over and over again. The insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over and yet expecting a different result. Okay, let's take a really, really quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about that the projection and how we have those patterns repeat in our lives. And
it happens
to all of us. So I'd like to shift and talk about that because I think it's important for people to understand what those patterns are and what they look like. Okay?
Perfect.
Cool.
A speaker has little value to an audience unless you, the listener, is motivated and empowered to change. Connie Whitman of Whitman Associates is a renowned speaker and is an architect of change. Consultations, training, seminars, and speaking engagements are the venues where she affects change. Whether your responsibilities include customer service, sales, marketing, training, executive management, or ownership, and you are seeking change in your organization, then you need to hire Connie Whitman of Whitman Associates. Connie doesn't just fill your ears with rhetoric. She speaks to the heart and success of your business. So next time you need to hire a speaker, don't hire someone that just talks. Hire an architect of change, Connie Whitman. Just ask for Connie by calling 732-888-1420. That's 732-888-1420. Or email connie@whitmanassociates.com.
We're back. We're speaking with Kate O'Connell. We're talking about her book, Beyond the Imprint. We're really talking about our core belief systems that are imprinted from generations gone by, as well as from when we're in utero, and how we can shift our thinking by using this book that Kate wrote, but also talking about the modality of how we can apply it to our lives. So now you talk about in the book this reflection or projections that we repeat patterns, right? And how do I think you explained why we repeat the patterns. How can we break that cycle?
So you kind of touched on it as you were signing off for the commercial break when you said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And so why we keep doing that is in reference to what I had mentioned earlier about relying on someone or something in the environment to meet our needs in a way mm-hmm. that they never were met before. So that's the impetus of why we keep cycling through this unconsciously, because a huge part of our imprinting is about codependent relationships. All relationships have a power dynamic inherent in them and resulting codependency, in which we are primarily focused outside of ourselves to have us reflected back to us by the other in a way that makes us feel better about ourselves. And so when we get into reflections and projections, that's what that is to understand that we are all reflections for each other, and that when these reflections are creating experiences within us that are uncomfortable, then we will, in our defense, because we're constantly defending what we don't want to connect to as memory in the body and the resulting feeling that's encoded in the body, then we project out onto the other. So projections are all about identifying on the other attributes that are not necessarily attributable to them, but we attribute to them because something inside of us is getting touched in on that's creating anxiety that we can't sit with. So every projection that happens in a relationship, when you identify a quality onto somebody else, is really a belief that you hold to be true about yourself that you judge. And so this is what's happening in all relationships, in all significant relationships for sure, but in all relationships.
So, Kate, the people who drive us the most crazy, what are we really, why are they driving us so crazy? Is it stuff within us?
Because they're reflecting something back to us that we don't want to look at. So let me give you a perfect example to just ground this a little bit. Because I've learned over the years that people still do not really understand how to translate this in real time when they're having this experience. So in describing this very thing to a client a few weeks ago, in which she was very much invested in her victim narrative that had her talking primarily about all the ways in which her husband was not showing up the way he needed to show up. And her final description as proof of the fact that this was true was that he had just suddenly left the room while she was in mid-set sentence. And her response to him was, "What, am I chopped liver?" And so when I started to describe what projections and reflections were, she got very angry. And she said, "So what you're telling me is, if this is true, what you're telling me, that he's a reflection of me, then he's reflecting to me that I'm chopped liver." And I said, "Nope." Mm-hmm. And she said, "What?" And I said, "He's reflecting to you that you believe that you're chopped liver." Mm-hmm. That's the difference. That's what these reflections are doing, because with all of our trauma imprinting over the years, and from the moment that we were conceived, when we're taking in sensations from the environment that negate us, that translates to very, very deep limiting beliefs about ourselves. We're talking about our shadow material. We're talking about all the things that we keep hidden, that for fear that if anybody got a peek at it, they would just run screaming in the other direction. So we hold tremendous shame imprinting relative to coming into this physical experience and what's been encoded as we inherited all the memory of our respective lineages. Just that in itself is significant. But now we add to it all the experiences we've had, and we are all defending primarily what we believe to be true about ourselves that's actually not. And so we end up dancing with people whose vibrational frequency resonates with ours, which is determined by our wounding. And so every relationship that you get into, I don't care how you describe it, you looked across the room, it was a dark room, it was a beautiful, you know, evening, and you just looked at whoever was across the room and said, damn, that's attractive, I need to dance with that. Well, that was true at the level of the mind, but what was really happening is you were being brought together through your vibrational resonance that set you up to have a perfect dance. And that dance gives you the opportunity to reveal to each other what's actually going on. So you stop projecting onto each other. You stop defending yourself, and you start to recognize that what's being reflected back to you is quite profound and is an opening and an invitation for you to go into the self. Stop focusing on the other. Go into the self and heal those very limiting and negative and shame-based beliefs about the self.
And it's funny because we're really good at hiding from ourselves, right, and deflecting. Well,
yes.
It's your fault, right? It's your fault. They did that. They did that to me. And I'm laughing. It reminds me, as you were saying, that Wayne Dyer, he has a great video that's been circulating again recently. I've seen it several times. But he says, if you change, like, what's going on in your head, if you change your thoughts and how you think, the things around you change. And that's really what we're talking about, that all of this is we're good at hiding from ourselves. I have to ask you, what are the most, you're giving great examples. So what are the most consistent and challenging issues that you see individuals experiencing, and how could this modality help, or how have you used this modality to help? You know what I mean? What are some of the common things?
Yeah,
we're all going through the same stuff.
We are all going through the same stuff, and depending on our age, it shows up a little differently. So consistently what I sit with adolescents is anxiety and substance abuse.
Mm.
And then potentially self-harm behaviors relative to their trauma imprinting from the age of 12 to 19. So that's a very classic, consistent presentation. And this modality, it turns out, is extremely effective with this demographic, because everything that you read in that book and just the little bit that we've talked about so far today affirms their experience in a way that's never been affirmed before. So they are starting to get that they've been conditioned. They're the ones. This is such a beautiful, critical, dynamic stage of development, because they're now questioning everything that the collective has unconsciously agreed to is true as it relates to our perception of reality. But why adolescence makes the adult collective so uncomfortable is they question it and they challenge it and they create new paradigms of being, of expressing themselves. And we tend to freak out in response and ratchet up control mechanisms because they make us uncomfortable. So I'm very comfortable with this demographic, largely because I've done this work for myself, so I'm comfortable with myself. And I don't need to control something that's outside of me because it doesn't make me uncomfortable. I think their radical expressions are very creative and very inviting, and remind me of a time when I was doing it as well. And so when they work with me in a very short time, things change, because it is one of the first experiences they've ever had in which what they're thinking and feeling and doing is not being challenged. And when you and they change very quickly because they haven't been conditioned to the extent that a 40 or 50-year-old has.
And you know what's funny, Kate, and I know I do this with my kids, like I'll be appalled at something they say to a friend or something they did, like, and what were you thinking, like that was even, not that they do anything bad, but for me, I'm like, oh, and my husband will say to me, they're not 56 years old. they're, you know, 18 and 21. And think about when you were 18 and 21, you couldn't see past your nose, let alone
That's
20
correct.
Step, right? That I could see repercussions now because I've lived 56 years. They've lived 18 to 21. They don't know what the repercussions are because they can't see that far in advance because they don't have the life skill. And I think as parents, I know, Kate, I do that. We forget.
Yes, and at the very basic biological level, all of adolescence from 12 to 19 is going through alchemical changes every
sure.
single moment. I heard an expression the other day from one of my spiritual teachers that identified adolescence as just being in the middle of the road all of the time. And I'm like, yeah, that was me. And I was on acid and magic mushrooms while I was in the middle of the road. It was like, but that was it, because that's what being an adolescent is about. So we're not helping them by wanting to control them and being fearful about what the potential is for them to do harm to self and others. Because I've known from doing this work as long as I have that these control mechanisms actually create the very experiences that we're trying to avoid. And so in order for them to become successful, healthy, happy adults, and I don't mean success in the way that conditioned reality means it, I mean success in the fact that they're giving themselves permission to be who they are. And in order for that to happen, then they have to be able to explore what it means to be who they are, and they're still trying to figure that out. And adolescence is all about differentiation, so it's all about nonconformity. So they won't be following the rules. And that's not a bad thing necessarily. I didn't. And if I had continued to follow the rules or try to, I never would have created this modality. This modality is way outside of the box of what would have been considered within traditional therapy, within the boundaries of traditional therapy.
And you're on to something. That's the critical thing. And I think as a parent, Kate, we don't want our kids to make mistakes. We don't want them to fail. And I think this is the biggest takeaway, at least for me, especially reading the book, is that through the mistakes that I've made and the stupid things I've done and the failures I've had is truly, and I know we've heard this before, but it's so true, and I challenge everybody to think about this. That's where I learned the most, by saying, oh, I can never do that again. But now as a 56-year-old woman, as an adult, when I see my kids doing things, I think, you know what? You think you know. Maybe you need to make that mistake to learn from it, you know, especially if it's not something that's going to hurt them, you know, physically. But they need to go out and explore and maybe, you know, hit some speed bumps, because that's how they learn to navigate. And the other thing recently, with a friend, dad's going in for surgery, and they're not telling the young man. He's 20 years old, I think. And it's not a bad surgery, like life and death surgery, but it's surgery. And I don't know if the dad of this person has ever been through anesthesia or not. But when I learned that the young man wasn't going to be told, I said to my husband, wow, I would tell our kids, because you know what? Even though they're in school and all of that, this is life. How do you learn how to navigate when you do hit these little speed bumps and this is nothing? And what if something does happen in the surgery that the kid doesn't get to say, hey, man, I'm with you. You know, go get him, Dad. I'm thinking of you. And not having that opportunity, and again, not right or wrong, good or bad, I was taken back that the parents aren't telling the kids. 20-year-old kid,
no,
not a 15-year-old, 10-year-old.
So let's be clear, not a kid.
No, man.
Not a kid. So you're describing, you know, a lot of things that are very consistent with what I talk about, write about, speak about, and work with clients. So let's go back to the very clear understanding that we learn through failure. That's an absolute truth. And neurokinetic therapy is a modality that actually is a very profound way to understand that. When we are learning how to walk, our ability to learn how to walk is exclusively determined by our ability to fall and mm-hmm. stumble. And in the absence of that, we would never learn how to walk. And what happens is the neocortex changes in response to these experiences that influences motor coordination. And so we don't just learn through failure from an abstract place. We literally learn everything through having experiences in whatever the identified goal is. In wanting to get there, we don't get there immediately. And the path to it is what determines everything through experience, what we learn, who we become, how we think. So there is no mistakes. Like you were referring to, you've made a lot of mistakes in life. There is no mistakes, because what I would challenge with that statement, which I do with everyone, is when you make the statement that you made a mistake, what you're saying is that you should have known better. When mm-hmm. the actual fact is everybody in every given moment is doing their best given what they understand in that moment. And sure. we can't ask anything more of anybody than that. And so this is a journey of discovery. That's what it means to be physical, is to come here and have the experience of being physical, which is quite profound. And in this experience, we discover who we are. Now, what happens with the conditioning is that it limits our ability to discover who we are, because we are showing up primarily according to the other's expectations. And yeah. that's more how we come out of alignment with ourselves. So back yeah. to this young man, he will be limited in his capacity to develop mechanisms that allows him to move through the world and through his life, through the speed bumps and through anything that might show up that is uncomfortable, his capacity to respond to it in a way that actually allows him to develop is going to be limited because of this need to protect him from himself. So when we raise children, we want to be able to give them wider and wider experiences, wider environments in which to explore the environment and therefore discover who they are within the context of that environment. And we have to be able to accept that they're going to stumble and fall and scrape their knees, and they might scrape somebody else's knee, but that's part of what it is. And in doing that, we have the greatest capacity to become healthy, balanced human beings.
And, you know, we're out of time, Kate, but the thing that I hear what you're saying, and the parents of my age, I think that we are constantly doing a disservice by constantly trying to protect our kids. And the best yes. example I could give is, you know, with the election last year, and when the results didn't come in the way some colleges wanted it to be, that they canceled classes and they brought the puppies on the campuses and some colleges stopped having tests because the teachers and the students were so upset. And now I have two kids in college. Last year I had one child, and I said to my husband, I called my son. I said, did your classes get canceled? And he said, no, what are you talking about? I said, oh, good thing, because I'd be on with the admissions. I'm paying through the nose all of this money for college, and they're canceling because they couldn't deal with the election results, and we're allowing our kids to take a day off and pet puppies to deal with the stress of that. Oh, my God, how are they going to deal with death and divorce and loss of jobs, really bad things that they didn't like the way the election went? We're really doing a disservice to our children, Kate, and I worry because we're trying to insulate them so much that we're not allowing them to learn how to navigate life. And life sucks sometimes, so you got to figure out how to keep moving.
Right. And I know we're almost out of time, but just to add to that, how we're really doing that, which this modality addresses, and I talk about every chance I get when I'm on a show such as yours, is we've undergone the largest social experiment in history by medicating the brains of our children yeah. and our adolescents without any longitudinal studies that yeah. are showing that there are not negative consequences. Any study out there has been funded by Big Pharma. So that's a clear indication of how much we need our children to not show up in a way yeah. that makes us uncomfortable. And that all started with Columbine. That's how, as a collective, all of this stuff was allowed to happen, in which we started to helicopter parent, in which mm-hmm. we're medicating everything when they can't sit still long enough, or what comes out of their mouth makes us uncomfortable. And one of my major platforms as I move forward with this modality, and the Healing Alliance of Central Virginia is to address all of this. One of my major goals is to create a documentary film that will shed some light on the realities of what we're doing right now with all of this medication.
I love it. And we talked about that, guys, in the last show. So if you want more, Kate and I did talk about the medication of our kids and what are the real long-term effects of that. You know, in addition, we're masking them from feeling things, and that's just not, you know, a good way to live life. Kate, thank you so much. Another just dynamic and challenging. It's a challenging conversation in the way that it forces us to, or hopefully forces us to, look at things from a different perspective. And that's really what my show is about. It's that, how can we find enlightenment, and whatever that means to you, but really how to change to become who we're meant to be, or to be honest, you know, to be able to self-reflect and be honest with ourselves. It's hard when things get uncomfortable. That's where the magic happens, and we're always afraid to go there. So thank you so much for that. If you want more information and you've been inspired by our discussion today, guys, go to Kate's website. It's www.oconnellkate.com, and it's two N's and two L's. I will post it on the Enlightenment of Change web talk radio platform. Also, if you'd like to send me stories or you need my help with anything, please reach out to me directly at connie@whitmanassoce.com. I really am here to help you, and I truly am an email away. Kate, thank you again for being on for a second show. Wow, I feel like we talked about so much, and yet there's so much more to talk about. So I highly recommend. I hope everybody goes and buys the book, because you give little outlines at the end to kind of bring that chapter together into several bullet points as a reference, and it's just a real good tool, I think, especially for parents too. Kate, it's well written, so I appreciate that. As a parent, I appreciate that information.
Thank you so much, Connie. I was glad to come back.
Yeah, truly my pleasure to have you. You guys, I hope you will question and join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together how to grow and challenge ourselves so we all embrace change. Go to that uncomfortable place and realize that that's where the magic happens. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.net. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful and hopefully an open perspective or a different perspective to be inspired to help create change in your life. Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, whitmanassoc.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.